call our third case for today, 11 AP 2597, Associated Bank versus Jack Collier. Arguing on behalf of Decade Properties is Valerie Bailey Wren.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Valerie Bailey Reen. Seated at counsel's table with me is my partner, Roy Prang. The president of Decade Properties, Jeff Kyle-Laver, is also here today. This case is about how a creditor obtains a common law lien on personal property. This is not a case about obtaining a lien on real property. There are two very different procedures and have different requirements. The lien on real property is a statutory lien, and it is found in the statutes. And one of the key components of a real estate lien is that you do need to have your judgment docketed in the lien and judgment docket in order to become a lien on real property for a period of 10 years. However, a personal property lien...
How is that different than recording in the Register of Deeds office?
The recording is typically mortgages. It's race notice as well, so you either register or, docket your lien in the judgment and lien docket if it's a lien, or you record it in the Register of Deeds if it's a real estate mortgage, both of which are found in the county records and of which title companies who routinely do the searches will look for. Personal property, however, is an entirely different creature. It is a common law lien that is, in fact, as was heard earlier today, around since the 1800s. And it is obtained by obtaining a order to show up for a supplemental examination and being the first creditor to serve that order on the debtor. So the first thing, and what makes this case easy, is we have to look to that to say who served Mr. Collier first with an order to appear. The answer is Decade Properties. And it did so under a statute under 816.03b, which is a very fluid, very easy method to get a supplemental examination. Under that statute, as the drafting notes simply state, this bill permits a creditor who has obtained a judgment against a debtor to apply to a court commissioner for a hearing to question the debtor concerning their property. Under that section, if you are a judgment creditor, you are entitled to seek an order to have a judgment debtor come in and answer to property. Now, SB 1 attempts to confuse the process for getting a lien on real estate with a lien on common law lien on personal property by saying, well, before you can have a judgment that is executable, that you can get a supplemental examination, you have to file it in the judgment and lien docket. Now, the reason why that doesn't make sense, I think, is probably easily explained in an example. I've been doing, as people know, collection work for a long period of time. My first job when I got out of law school and I started at Quarles was to repossess a Chevy Chevette that did not run. And that is an order for replevin. It says you're entitled to go pick up that piece of equipment. It's not a monetary judgment, so you can't docket it in the judgment and lien docket because the only judgments that go in that are monetary judgments. So here I have this order that I'm entitled to certain collateral. In that case, it was easy to find the Chevy Chevette because it did run. But in a lot of cases, personal property disappears. And so in those cases, you want to be able to go in, get an order forcing the debtor to show up and tell you where your collateral is. So it does not make any sense to require a judgment to be docketed in the judgment and lien docket when you don't have one, when you can't get one. The whole point of Badger Lines was this is a process for personal property, not judgment liens on real estate. So, and then their argument was also, well, you...
Counsel, let me interrupt you a minute. I saw you were at the last argument, so you know that I have some concerns about priorities. And if I buy your argument, you're telling me that once you serve an order to appear, you have a prior common law lien on all the debtor's property?
Only what, in my view, Your Honor, is only on the property that they have, the debtor has of that date. In other words, your lien doesn't extend into the future on property that's unknown, but
okay,
it's so property of that date.
Okay, so I'll pull my question in a little bit. You have a common law lien on all of the personal property that the debtor owns on the date you serve them with the order. Okay, what if there is a judgment that was docketed 3 weeks before yours, and instead of doing a supplemental exam, they just talk to people and find out where some property is. You serve your order. They file a garnishment action against a bank account that they hear about that's not exempt property. You have a prior lien against that bank account just because you serve the order? And if you do, what happens to the garnishment action lien that the legislature said is there?
That's a good point. On the garnishment, I think on the execution, it's pretty clear, yeah, you do have the prior lien. On the garnishment, I think you still do, because the issue is when is the lien perfected. And a garnishment lien is perfected when it's served. If you previously served the order to show up, that's when your lien's perfected, and I think that takes priority.
Well, what do you think about, I mean, we're a race notice state. If the person I told you about filed bankruptcy just because you served an order to appear, but your judgment's docketed 3 weeks after the first person dockets their judgment, what kind of priority do you think you're going to have in bankruptcy to get paid out?
Well, in that case, it depends on when they filed bankruptcy, because then you have the preference period, and that is...
Well, just say it's there, neither one are preferences.
Okay.
Who has priority?
Then it depends on whether you're talking about real estate that are docketed.
Just personal property.
Well, the docketing doesn't affect that. It's only when the order to show cause is first served. So it is a race.
But federal law relies on state law to determine who has priority in a bankruptcy, correct?
Correct.
All right. And what you're saying is that even though somebody docketed their judgment 3 weeks before, if you served your order to appear and then they filed a bankruptcy the next day, you have priority over a prior docketed money judgment.
You do. And
don't you think that's going to change a lot of federal law?
I don't see how it impacts on federal law, because...
Well, I'm just thinking bankruptcy and priorities determined in bankruptcy are usually determined from the date when you docket your money judgment.
Under bankruptcy law, they follow state law.
Right,
so,
right.
So if it's docketed, it's from the date you docket for real estate. And so that would be based on when you file
Okay, so you're saying in a federal bankruptcy context, they don't look at the docketing in regard to priorities to payouts from personal property?
No, they look to when, under state law, when you get the lien because of Badger Lines. Because Badger Lines was the same situation. There was a trustee who said, and a receiver lien. The receiver lien was...
Well, Badger Lines never decided whether there was a common law lien. Everybody assumed there was a common law lien. The question was, with this lien everybody was assuming is there, when was it perfected? That was the question in Badger Lines,
right.
Correct? Okay. But what is concerning me in this case and concerned me in the last is the effect of an unending lien on all of the debtor's personal property. I mean, that was the position in the last case, and that's your position here. And it seems there are so many statutes that deal with personal property. There we had a transaction that may have been a secured transaction under 409. Here we don't have that circumstance. But what concerns me is, are we changing the rules of priority by what you're asking us to do here?
I would say no, and the reason for that is in the issue with the secure transactions, if you have a purchase money security interest, that trumps any prior liens anyway, whether it's a creditor's lien or a judgment lien or just a general business security lien. Under executions, you know, it's all based on when it becomes perfected. And so with personal property, because personal property isn't titled, and for instance, the titling statutes for cars and boats and things of that nature, you get a lien based on where you title. The receiver or the creditor gets a lien on anything other than what is already got a lien on. So all they get is the debtor's interest. So the only priority you're really impacting is what the debtor has, and it has to be non-exempt assets as well. So when you get your creditor's lien, it's not like you're jumping ahead of validly filed liens. You're not.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's a good explanation.
So, and I think...
I wonder if we could clarify something. In Badger Lines, the question is whether a creditor, I'm just reading from the first paragraph, question in the before this court is whether a creditor who initiates supplementary proceedings must do more than serve a debtor with notice to appear in order to obtain a superior lien that cannot be overcome by another creditor on a simple contract. So I read, and then they answer, because we are persuaded by authority from other jurisdictions and public policy, we conclude that a creditor's lien is valid and superior at the time the creditor serves the debtor with a summons to appear. I read that as the law of that case. So if I'm a creditor who has served a summons to appear at a supplementary proceeding, I have a lien. Now, one of the questions is, on what? Right?
Correct.
I think everyone can agree on any property that's discovered in that proceeding that doesn't have, under another law, a superior lien.
Correct.
Okay. Issue comes up. What other property? And your response, if I heard it correctly, is any other property then in existence, even if it's not picked up in that supplementary. Is that right?
Yes, I mean, that covers if the...
That there isn't a superior lien on another law. Okay.
Correct. Assuming that the debtor owns it, I mean, it doesn't pick up property that the debtor gets in the future, but it, that way if the debtor is lying or hiding it and you can find it,
right,
you would have a lien.
It doesn't pick up the lottery ticket later purchased.
Correct.
In your opinion. Okay.
In my opinion.
All right. And... So what went right or wrong here for your client?
Well, this was a case where you have two competing unsecured creditors.
Okay.
You've got one creditor, my client, who had, in essence, and it's in the appendix, had paid off a note in 2006 to another creditor, a Higgins. I don't know what his first name is. Mm-hmm. We wired the money. Higgins got paid off, and so because, yes, we have never hidden the fact that Decade's principal or the president and Jack Collins were business associates, and during the course of that long relationship, Decade and other entities had loaned Jack and Jack's entities money. So, and in fact, in this specific case was in 2006, Decade loaned about $650,000 to pay off a note, took an assignment of the note in order to help Mr. Collier hopefully not file bankruptcy. Fast forward, Associate Banks gets a judgment in 2010, properly dockets its judgment, so it has a lien on any real property. It was also a foreclosure action, so they were foreclosing on some property. We find out about this after SB1 buys part of the judgment from Associate and then seeks to have a supplemental examination on Mr. Kyle Lieber. Mr. Kyle Lieber, you know, obviously with the money Decade loaned, was concerned about protecting its interests, so it got a judgment. It also got an order to show up for a supplemental.
Let's just double back. In September 2010, Associated Bank initiated supplementary proceedings, but didn't get service on Collier, right?
It appears that actually it was SB 1. Associate had sold its judgment at that point.
Okay. Right.
So it was at some time in that time frame that SBM attempted to find
it. So we had a supplementary.
Right. He was trying to...
Purpose.
No service, though there's no evidence in the record that they attempted to serve him by publication, which the supplemental examination statutes allow you. So if somebody is evading service after three trials, you serve by publication.
Right.
Around the same time, they also asked to do a supplemental examination of Mr. Kyle Lieber, who finds out about the pending judgment and goes to counsel and says, well, the upshot is you got two competing creditors, there's limited assets, and we're not evading the fact that Mr. Collier was willing to work with us because we had worked with him in the past. And if you could have limited assets and they're unsecured creditors.
He was just being shrewd.
Yeah, debtors prefer to deal with creditors that will work with them versus creditors that may have been pursuing them as an investment opportunity.
Now, Decade got a judgment, right?
Correct.
And against Collier. There was a goof, right?
It was not a goof on our part. What happened was...
No, this is the very interesting thing. It's about goofs.
It makes this case interesting. We submitted our judgment to be docketed in the judgment and lien docket because we knew there was real estate out there as well. And although we knew we'd be second, you know, if the first gets paid off, there might be something. So we submitted it to the clerk of courts of Waukesha County. They sent us a certified copy with a notice of entry on it dated October 2010. They sent us a receipt that said that they had taken our $5 for docketing, but they did not docket it. They failed to do their non-discretionary job, and for whatever reason, it never got docketed. So that's why we're, in essence, here today.
Okay, but then Decade brought a supplementary, right?
Correct, correct. They brought a supplemental. We did a supplemental in early in November.
November 2010. And then in April 2011, SB 1 finally got service on Collier. Right.
Correct. So they waited from the when they intervened, when they purchased the judgment in August of 2010 to April 2011 to serve the order, even though they could have done it by publication had they felt that he was evading service.
So the way I summarized it, Collier has the first judgment against him is by... SB1, in effect, or associate, right?
Correct.
Okay. So SB1 has the first judgment, and SBA has the first docketing, right?
Correct.
SB1 has the first supplementary, but doesn't get service.
Correct.
Decade has the second judgment in time, not docketed. Second supplementary in time, but the first supplementary to get service.
Correct.
That's a good summary, short summary of the facts.
Those right. are the facts.
And then what's the principle of law that you think should be applied in this case?
Well, Badger Lines, setting aside the lien, because they assumed there was a lien, but said to perfect the lien, you file. It's the person who first serves it. That's the law that's been in effect for 14 years now. That's what creditors rely on. And that's why creditors are, if they think there's personal property versus real property, that's why up to this point, until the court changes it, if it does change it, creditors try to get the first service on it. Now, I understand there's some concerns that, well, isn't that inequitable? You've got a judgment. Somebody who has a judgment first, shouldn't they get it first? But when you look at it, we had advanced the money back in 2006. You know, had we not done that, Higgins would have sued and he would have been here today in first place. There ought to be some public policy reasons to allow debtors and creditors to work with each other instead of having to rush out and get judgments just in order to preserve their rights to do supplement, you know, to get a lien on personal property. So, you know, I don't think you can just look at whoever files a judgment first, we should promote that, because then you're going to promote a race to the courthouse and just trying to get a judgment on in order to prioritize your right to personal property.
But you need a judgment to do a supplemental.
You do need to do a judgment, but in this case, we waited to get our judgment. In 2006, when we bought the note, you know, we didn't let Higgins get the judgment and then buy the judgment. We tried to work with the debtor. And so my only point is, you know, just because you're the first to get the judgment doesn't necessarily make you the best creditor. I mean, sometimes debtors and creditors try to work with each other. If that answers your question.
You support Badger Line, and you say service is the time of perfection. That's it.
That's what Badger Line's, my reading of it, says. And in addition, I don't think there's anything in the supplemental examination statutes that require a docketed judgment, because those docketed judgments relate to real estate. Now, one concern you might have is on this whole idea of a secret lien. Well, because of CCAP now, there is a position on there where it says you got a judgment. There's another line where it says whether it's docketed or not. A lot of creditors do not docket their judgments. For instance, utilities. Utilities may have 50 renters that skip out and owe them small amounts of money. This is common in small claims court. So they would get a judgment, but they don't typically go in and pay the extra $5 because it adds up, and they know that the renters have no real estate. So that's another occasion in which they would use the supplemental examination procedures without having a docketed judgment. So CCAP is there. Even if I don't see any benefit in forcing or requiring creditors to docket their judgment in the real estate lien docket in order to give notice for personal property, because personal property is movable. It's not titled. It's not in the county. In this case, there were membership interests in Tennessee. There were membership interests in assets outside the state and outside the county. So it doesn't really give a lot of people notice of a secret, you know, that you're trying to get a personal property lien by docking it in the real estate judgment. I think that's why Badger Line said what you need to do is ask the debtor. You're going to have to call them in and say, you know, is there anybody else chasing you? What assets do you have?
How long do you think this lien lasts that you're talking about?
The lien only lasts on the property they have as of that time you serve it.
Well, what if he keeps the property for 5 years and you haven't executed against it within that time? Does the lien stay?
Within the 5 years, but then it's gone because you only have 5 years. So the lien is there, but for your concern, if you're concerned that a bank would loan money, again, I go back to the purchase money aspect of things. If you loan money for specific property, you take prior to any other secret liens or other liens. So... But most creditors, when they find there's non-exempt assets that the debtor has, they're going to get a turnover order and ask the court to have them surrendered to them so they can seize it and sell them and pay off the lien. So it's very unlikely that you would just have a lien on non-exempt personal property that just sits out there for 5 years. I certainly wouldn't advise a client to wait that long.
Counsel, I've read the per curiam of the Court of Appeals. This per curiam turns on docketing of the judgment, not on service.
Correct.
Is that your objection to this opinion? I mean, I know you object because you lost, but is that the reasoning? Should this reason that the first person who served notice under the supplemental has the lien?
On personal property only.
Yeah, that's right. I understand that, and I stay away from real estate because I know that's true. And that's why, and I can't remember whether I read South Milwaukee, it says, in a race notice jurisdiction such as Wisconsin. Is that real estate or that's real estate? That was my understanding. Are we a race notice? Is there a race notice on personal property?
No, it's under the Badger lines. And I do want to point out that I think the Court of Appeals decision misread the statute on what it takes to get an execution, because that statute said you have to have a judgment either perfected by the court of record, which is the case here, or in any other judgment in any other county, it has to be entered in the judgment and lien docket. So it's an either or. They tried to combine the two requirements. So even if, and I see my red light is off, so.
I'd like you to continue your response. And so is this consistent with the Badger line?
The Court of Appeals decision?
Yes.
No. It's unfortunately blurring the distinction between real estate with personal property. And in addition, if you look at the supplemental examination statutes, even if you said you had to have an executable judgment to be a judgment creditor, which I don't think is the case, but even if you did, we were, because we did perfect. The Court of Appeals recognized that we perfected our judgment by putting it in the judgment that was signed. There's no requirement to put it in the judgment lien docket to be executable. And so I think they just misread the statute, and so even if there is a requirement, we fulfilled it.
What about the last paragraph on equitable concepts and remedy, and that they seem to suggest the equities were against you, maybe for several reasons, including, and that's why you stressed your relationship with the other gentleman, so that it's...
Right. I think the reason why we said the equities, I think the court had an incorrect reading of the law. There's a recent case, Boston Old Colony, Inc., it's 91 Wis. 2nd, 813, 1979. Okay, that's not real recent, but it's recent, more recent than the 1800 cases.
91 Wis. 2nd what?
813. 91 Wis. 2nd, 813. And that case says, and it collects a bunch of cases, including a 1894 case called Goodman, that says, if a document is presented for filing, the legal standard treats the document as being received at the date received, even if it's dated at some other date. And that specifically says, if you do everything you can do, you present a document for filing, you present the right filing fees, and you do it timely, and if the clerk makes a mistake and doesn't do their non-discretionary duties and doesn't file it, and you can prove that, and there's no question in this case we can because it's in the record, then you should have a judgment as of the date that you attempted to docket it. This is not the type of case where you filed late or you tried to file after hours or you didn't pay the right filing fee. This is a case where we did everything in our power to do it, and so we believe it was an abuse of discretion not to accept that the date of docketing was the October date when we submitted it, because the clerk doesn't have any discretion to say, I don't like you, I don't like the fact that you're a friendly creditor. They have to docket the judgment.
What about the statute that says if the clerk goofs up and doesn't do a ministerial duty, that your remedy lies with suing the clerk?
I don't think it's the sole remedy. I think that that's the situation that the cases that addressed where because they didn't docket it in the lien docket with the real estate, and then in one case it was the judgment against the husband, and then he transferred to the wife before they docketed it, and then the wife sold it to somebody else, which was a third-party bona fide purchaser. That's your remedy then, because you can't unring the bell, where that's not the situation here.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Neil Levin wishes to appear, and attorney Jessica Hudson Polakowski will introduce him. Counsel?
Good afternoon, Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Jessica Hudson Polakowski, and I'm pleased to introduce you today to Mr. Neil Levin, who will be arguing on behalf of SB1 Waukesha County, LLC.
And he is not licensed in Wisconsin, or is licensed?
He is not licensed in Wisconsin. He is, however, admitted pro hoc vice.
From what state?
In what state is he? He's admitted pro hoc vice in Wisconsin. He is licensed in Illinois.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good afternoon. May it please the Court, I'm also licensed in the state of New York, just for the full record.
I don't have to choose under which state you're going to be authorized to argue this case.
My application to be admitted pro hoc vice, of course, would have included my admissions in both Illinois and New York. I'm not certain it ties directly to one of the states, but my home state is Illinois.
Okay,
I'm from Chicago. Thank you. Certainly, I think that a scholarly article is due from those much smarter than me on how we might be able to reconcile the very many provisions relative to post-judgment proceedings in the statutes. But I do believe that we can reconcile them for purposes of this particular issue. And I believe that the Court has done so, and we can reconcile the various cases, including Badger Lines. Let me point out from the very inception, I don't disagree with Badger. I believe that there was a missed opportunity to highlight a very important fact in Badger, but I don't disagree with the outcome, of course. The outcome was such that there has to be two things, and this is true of secure transactions and in post-judgment remedies. You have to give the world notice. When we talk about this being a race notice state, it's not notice to the debtor. It's notice to the world. And if we said that the only action required in order to be able to have a lien, and the very nature of a lien is, in fact, asserting your superior interest in a thing or real property, the very nature of that is that the world needs notice of it. It's been true in secure transactions and the UCC for years. I don't need to explain any of that to you, I'm sure. And so when we're talking about race notice, it's not a race to see who can serve the debtor first to get him to come in and answer some questions about property, because that's what 816 is. Come in and answer questions about property. It's not a lien statute. There's no reference whatsoever in 816 to any kind of lien whatsoever. There's no reference in 816 about how to get at the property. And if I may borrow Ms. Bailey Rinn's example, the Replevin, example, for just a moment. There's two ways of perfecting a security interest, as the Court knows, and as it even cited in Badger Lines under the secure transaction provisions of the Code. One is perfecting your lien. The other is possession. Replevin is an action to take possession. We brought an action to take possession of a piece of personal property, which was the subject of the order that is being appealed from. But interestingly enough, my esteemed adversaries did not appeal that portion of the order. We brought a motion to turn over an asset. That asset was turned over to us by Judge Hassan. They don't appeal that ruling. What's more, this friendly little relationship between Decade and the judgment debtor, you would think, would allow an opportunity for the judgment debtor to say, here's the asset to satisfy the judgment. They didn't do that. They did nothing to try and execute upon their judgment. Nothing. In the short period of 6 days, they filed 6 complaints, got service, got judgments, and very contrary to the lack of import that they're putting on docketing the judgment, they quickly and carefully, 6 days after filing the complaint, sent letters to the clerk's office saying, please docket our judgment. If it's not important to docket it, why bother? As Ms. Bailey Rinn says, and I don't really have any examples from her in her briefs on this concept of utility companies not docketing their judgment, but certainly, why would they bother then? Why spend the extra $5?
Does the record make sense of the argument advanced by opposing counsel, that is, there was real estate, and even though it was second judgment, they would be second in line on that real estate?
I'm sorry. I didn't hear all of that. I'm very sorry.
No, it's, I'm sure, my fault. Let me speak more clearly and loudly. Your opposing counsel indicates that they docketed the judgment second after they got it, docketed it, bothered to docket it, because there was real estate to which it could attach. You're advancing the argument why they do it. Why should they do it and spend the $5? I'm saying, as I understood your opposing counsel, that reason was given. Now, maybe that's not a true reason based on the record. Is there anything in the record that would suggest anything inconsistent with that reason?
Yes. They didn't pursue the real estate. Were they just going to sit on the lien indefinitely on the real estate and wait for foreclosure and then try and take their money out? I don't think we have enough in the record relative to the value of the real estate, the fact that the receiver was the one who facilitated the foreclosure. I think that is in the record. But I don't think there's enough in the record to be able to answer that question squarely, where I could say to you, this is why they did nothing.
Or they did or did do nothing, I guess. I mean, if we don't have the value, we don't know if there's anything left over after the first docket, the judgment.
Well, any information I would share with you on that right now is not in the record, correct. But there is evidence in the record that they did nothing and certainly didn't pursue the same AW1 asset, which is the subject of the turnover order. So how the procedural posture went was such that we had brought a motion for turnover of this AW1 asset. AW1 is the name of an LLC that holds various real estate. They had brought their motion for summary judgment trying to prioritize their liens. These were heard together. And the order addresses both issues. It denies their motion for summary judgment and grants our motion for turnover. They don't appeal the motion for turnover. If their interest was to try and get a claim on personal property, why didn't they appeal that order? Better yet, since they're friends, why didn't they also file a motion for turnover of the personal property, thereby taking the most superior lien claim of all, possession? They sought no possession of any real property. We did.
Counsel, your reference to the word turnover order make me think of the certification in the Badger Lines case. That certification to us from the Seventh Circuit asked, as the Badger Lines opinion indicates, which was issued, by the way, on St. Patrick's Day, a good day to issue opinions, I suppose. The certification sets up the question that's set forth in the opinion. And the whole argument was, do you need more for perfection? When I say whole argument, that was a major tenet of the argument. And they said, the argument was advanced, you need either appointment of a receiver or a turnover order. The Badger case went on to tackle that argument and then went on to tackle the whole notice argument that you started your arguments with. I see in paragraph 22 that language in the middle of paragraph 22. Do you happen to have that opinion in front of you, the Badger case opinion?
Yes.
Okay. It says, however, this court remains ultimately unconvinced that either the appointment of receiver or the assistance of a turnover order has the effect of making the lien significantly more public than service of a subpoena upon the debtor. My recollection is that's what the Seventh Circuit Court also said in its certification. But the opinion appears to say, based on our prior cases, based on our policy and not backing away at all from our aversion to to secrecy, this is the rule of law to answer your question.
I read the opinion as saying, under these facts as presented to us, that the answer is what you need in order to no additional step is necessary to perfect the receiver's lien after service. So maybe the it's a unanimous opinion, but maybe it's wrong. Maybe there should be something more required. Do you think there should be, and if so, what?
I don't think there should be anything necessary after the service of the notice. Here's the world according to Mr. Levin as far as how we reconcile Badger. You need notice to the world and notice to the debtor. In writing Badger, you said... The court said that the race ends with the notice to the debtor. But the court also said, in paragraph 2, that the judgment had been docketed. This was what I referred to as what I thought to be the missed opportunity, to highlight the fact that there must be this condition precedent. So when we talk about there being no more needed than the service of the notice to appear on the judgment debtor, we're talking about no more after that point in time, because that really was the analysis, because we had to find whether or not we were within the 90-day period in Badger or outside the 90-day period for preference actions. If there were more actions required after the service of the notice to appear, we'd be within the 90-day period, and it would be subject to avoidance. And the court said, no, we don't have to go to those next steps. But the court did not say that we don't have to take the first step. Nowhere has the court... I'm sorry. Your Honor was about to ask me.
Maybe you're the Your Honor. I would hope so. So, is it your view that Badger should be affirmed, but that it should be interpreted or modified to mean that not only must you serve, but you have to docket it?
I think all Badger needs is clarification.
Okay. Call it what you will.
Yes.
But your clarification is docket.
That it was necessarily to this court... the fact that the judgment was docketed. And let's talk, if I may, about this idea of the docketing only being with respect to real estate. I think this is a giant red herring. Let's look at the words used by the legislature. At section 779.07, they call it a judgment and lien docket, but it doesn't talk about real estate.
No, it covers everything.
Everything.
If you're going to want a lien, you get it filed. It may not be any good, but you put it in that docket.
Exactly. That's it. It covers everything. It's not just to real estate. And there was a reason for it, because the legislature said we need a way to determine priorities. And this court said that as well in Barrett. If I can quote Barrett... turn to the right tab, I would quote Barrett. Quoting Barrett at paragraph 7 and 8, or paragraphs 40 and 41. In a race notice jurisdiction such as Wisconsin, prompt docketing of judgments is needed to establish the proper priority of claims. It doesn't say real estate. It says claims. Moving on to paragraph 41. In order to enable those searching the judgment dockets, not searching all the various cases that were filed, but the actual judgment docket, which is one of the reasons, no doubt, it was put there. In order to enable those searching the judgment dockets to rely upon these dockets and to avoid litigation, which is unfortunately what we're here doing today, about priority of claims, it is imperative that the clerk's office docket a judgment immediately upon entry of the judgment. As the court stated more than a century ago, the people of the state ought to be able to rely on the judgment docket to show encumbrances, in this case, on real estate. Let's also look to execution of a judgment.
Before you get to execution, I want to get back to notice, if I may. And again, looking at the analysis and Badger lines with regard to the notice and the secret liens, it doesn't talk about anything in the analysis about whether or not it was docketed. The analysis, if you go through it, and I'm sure you have, cites to the Federal Circuit Court case of Hilde. It advances in its discussion that there are other ways that you can find out what's going on with regard to the case. First, the trustee can inquire of the debtors. Second, this is all in paragraph 25. In paragraph 26, it talks about there are other options more aligned with the actual practice of the parties, and it talks about, I suppose, argued at oral argument about how things are done. And none of it even makes any reference. In fact, it's quite inconsistent with saying, well, all you have to do is dock it. It gives other examples of how people can get notice. And based on public policy, based on, of course, those three older cases and also the Hilde case in the Federal Circuit. So I think that you're going to have to, I don't care what word you change, alter the analysis, because that wasn't part of the analysis in Badger Line, rather in Badger Lines.
And looking for the most politically correct way of saying it, Your Honor, that's why I chose the words missed opportunity.
Oh,
I believe it's
you're
a,
gracious.
Thank you.
I'll be more direct.
I think it was a given. It wasn't an issue. There was no reason for it to be an issue.
But it was in the sense that the whole thing, the certification was, you need more than just the service.
You need notice to the world.
Yeah. You need something more than that. And our answer as a court was, no.
You need notice to the world. How could
you? Oh, that wasn't the answer. The answer was no, paragraph 27, no. You know, so, I mean, I'm not saying that this case has to live on. I'm just saying that it, you know, it's a unanimous opinion, and it can be changed. Any case can be changed. You know, one of the things you learn when you get to this court is how to count to four. But I'm saying this opinion, the analysis regarding notice had nothing to do with whether or not it was docketed, unless you can show me anything in the analysis that employed that discussion.
It's not there. I believe it needs to be fixed.
Didn't you have a supplemental without docketing the judgment?
Yes. You can't have execution without docketing.
You cannot.
You cannot. And here's why. 815.05, the execution section of the code, goes into great detail about how to execute upon a judgment. It even lists six things that necessarily have to be in the document that you're using and giving to the sheriff to execute on the judgment. That sixth thing is the time and entry in the judgment and lien docket. You can't add that to the sheriff's execution if you didn't docket it.
You know,
so I believe that you can have supplemental proceedings. I believe you could take discovery. Of course you can. Maybe you just want to determine whether or not there's a viable pursuit to be had. You don't know whether or not the judgment debtor is judgment proof. Maybe, as some of the cases cite, and as Bailey Wren has emphasized, maybe we need that period of time for people to be able to negotiate settlements or see if they can otherwise resolve the case. We can have discovery in aid of the execution without docketing. But if you're going to take action against property and you want to be superior or first in line relative to that, you've got to give the world notice. You've discussed it in many of your opinions. You've got to give the world notice. And I would emphasize, Justice Bradley, that it wasn't discussed, but neither was world's notice. It wasn't an issue. You didn't need to discuss it. It didn't come up. In other cases, you were very specific, the court was, to discuss world notice, notice to the world. It's the race that you're talking about when we talk about a race notice state. That is the race. It's
with all due respect, I don't know where you get race notice with personal property. The language on race notice from South Milwaukee comes from real estate. The race notice language from South Milwaukee comes from real estate. I don't know where you get the concept of, and that comes from the recording statutes and from cases that interpret it. But where do you get race notice from in personal property?
With all due respect, Your Honor, I don't believe it says that. I don't believe it conditions its discussion of race notice on real estate.
This was a real estate case.
That it was.
Okay.
I
agree with you. The third justification for our reading is it furthers the race notice provisions of Wisconsin law. The determining priority of claims should be uniform, not variety of procedures for docketing judgments. But this was entirely a real estate case.
Understood.
So if you want to shift it to personal property, you have to explain to me why that concept shifts. I know why it was in real estate. Because it's in the statutes.
I'll answer that twofold, if I may.
Okay.
First, because you still need to give notice. Even with respect to personal property and purchase money security interests and boats and cars and airplanes, there are notice provisions. We have notice provisions all over the code. The statutes talk about notice to the world. Recording, we record with respect to all sorts of personal property. Here, in post-judgment proceedings, you also have a statute that talks about notice. It's the judgment in lien docket, which does not condition itself on real estate.
That's right.
As I cited, 77907 does not condition itself on real estate. The legislator did not say, create the judgment in lien docket only for real estate. The second reason, if I may answer the question, why I think it should be this way, is the equities. And there are two equities in this case. There's the subjective and the objective equities. The subjective equities, the court has already touched on. With all due respect to counsel for Mr. Kierlieber and Decade, I believe it's clear what happened here. 6 days, an unheard of amount of time, within a month after the start of our proceeding supplemental. 6 days, they filed six lawsuits, got service of those lawsuits, got acceptance of service of the order to appear, and sent a letter to the clerk's office asking that those judgments be docketed. 6 days. It's unheard of. There's a reason for that. It's obvious what the reason was. The friend was helping a friend. These claims, Bailey Rinn has told you, were at that point 4 or 5 years old. 4 or 5 years, this was not a concern to Mr. Kierlieber. But when we got our judgment, when SB 1 bought the judgment and stood in the shoes of Associated relative to these claims, all of a sudden his intent changed. And then he didn't do anything about it. He was just trying to assert a lien. And I think the court has already correctly pointed out, if the clerk's office made a mistake, there's a remedy. That's what Barrett was all about. There was a mistake made, and in Barrett, that's what they did. They went after the clerk. And that's the remedy here. And I will tell you, I don't believe that we can sit here and say we were the good guys because we did everything we were supposed to do by sending a letter and our check to the clerk's office. Judge Hassan put it best. You didn't ensure that it was done. You never looked at the docket, because if you did, you'd have known that your judgment had not been docketed.
Counsel, does a judgment have to be entered into the judgment in lien docket 77907 to be executable?
Yes. As I explained in, make sure I have my sites right, 81505, under the execution section of the statute, the only way you can execute upon the judgment is giving a document to the sheriff, which includes six things. the court it came out of, the county it came out of, the parties, the amount of money the judgment was, the amount that might be still due and owing, and the ever-important number six, the time of entry in the judgment and lien docket.
How does, and I understood that argument, but I don't understand how that interfaces with 815.04, where it is in the disjunctive. That is, 815.04 sub 1A says, upon any judgment of a court of record perfected as specified in 80606. And, of course, if you look at 80606, what does it mean to be perfected? It means to put the amount of costs in the judgment. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what it means. You can perfect it under any judgment of a court of record perfected by putting the amount in the taxation of costs, or any judgment of any other court entered in a judgment and lien docket of a court of record, execution may issue, etc. Now, I don't mean, you know, I'm not going to read the whole thing. Tell me if there's anything you want to comment on. But my point is, there is the disjunctive. And so it seems to me that in answer to my question, I know you have 815.05, but I'm not sure how that fits in with 815.04 about when execution can be issued.
Admittedly, not very well.
I like your candor. How did you start out? A missed opportunity.
Yes.
The legislature has a missed opportunity for reconciling
yes. These
two.
These post-judgment proceedings, these post-judgment remedies and provisions have been an evolution. As you know, there were the creditors' bills from way back when, which were the basis for some of the very older cases that were cited in the late 1800s and such. It's been an evolution. I will say that the court could potentially take judicial notice of the fact that this is not unique to Wisconsin.
Okay. But to me, 815.04, you've got that or, you got two sides of the or. In a plain reading of 815.04, the answer to my question of whether or not it has to be docketed in order to be executed, under 815.04, the answer is no.
So the answer is that you couldn't actually...
Just a minute. What subsection are you talking about, Justice Bradley?
I'm talking about 815.0. I've been reading 815.041A.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And my earlier reference was to 815.05. And I would say that would tell you when you can execute, but the how is at 815.05, and you're not going to be able to get there. Are these inconsistent? I believe that they potentially are. Are we talking about execution here? No, we are not. Because you can execute on an asset, and that's not what we're talking about here. Because where we actually got was to turn over an asset. And once again, borrowing from secured transactions, there's two ways to assert your interest in property, the lien or possession. And if, in fact, I'm sorry, too,
but I'm a little confused then. The reason I asked this question about whether or not you need to dock it in order to execute is because a minute or two earlier, and I was just getting up to snuff, you were saying under 815.05, and you said, and you're referring to that, you're referring to 799, whatever it is, the docket and lien thing. And so that seemed to be your argument. And so I thought, doesn't seem like it to me. So is execution an issue in this case or not?
It is not.
Well, then why? I don't understand why you were arguing it.
What we're borrowing is that in this particular context, even the legislator had contemplated the need for a docketing of the judgment to have proper execution. And so, again, this idea that docketing is only germane vis-a-vis real estate is completely erroneous. Because here, executing on personal property even requires that we have a docketed judgment. Now, let's go to perfected for a minute, and I need to really point out that the discussion of perfection in Badger is not the perfection we're talking about of the type in the statute vis-a-vis the taxation of costs. So, once again, Someone's going to rewrite this thing and make it much more clear and succinct for everyone. But until then, we do have a number of concepts: entered, rendered, perfected, docketed. I might have missed one. And perfected is very different here than it is in Badger. In Badger, we're talking about finishing off or perfecting the lien. And Badger called it a receiver's lien, but noted in a footnote that we're really not talking about a receiver's lien in terms of a receiver having been appointed. So we're all clear. We're talking about the lien that's created upon perfection by service of the notice to appear. So my red light is on, if I may conclude that thought.
Very quickly, and yeah. I have a couple of questions.
Very good. So, in other words, I think what we're talking about is this two-phased process that would be consistent with all of the provisions currently in the statutes and Badger. And that is, docket first, give notice to the world, and then serve the debtor to perfect it. Yes, Your Honor.
So what's the matter with the Court of Appeals decision? You won, but you got problems with it, don't you?
Missed opportunities. Your Honor, with all due respect, I think that they got it right. I think their equities argument was excellent.
Okay.
I do believe that they have come up with the right ruling and pointed out that notice to the world is the most important piece. Judge Hassan himself emphasized that point.
Notice to the clerk.
I'm sorry?
Rather than notice to the clerk.
They were both consistent in that analysis. That is correct.
So if we just said we adopt this as our opinion, you'd think that was a smashing opinion, good for everybody.
The appellate opinion?
Yeah.
I would not call it smashing.
Okay.
I love the outcome, but I have to admit that I would not call it smashing.
That's right. I want to know what the defects are. That's my point of my question.
I believe we went astray in a few areas. I could highlight those if you'd like.
Would very quickly, please.
I'm sorry, I actually just broke my glasses, so I will look just a little strange with my monocle now, attempting to read the
not to me,
fine
because
print.
I can't see you. I said not to me.
Thank you. Very gracious. Thank you. The $25 readers.
You get them from Walgreens.
Go ahead. I'm sorry?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, sorry. In paragraph 8, I find the first, we'll say, somewhat erroneous statement. Decade moved for summary judgment, seeking a determination that his lien had priority over SB1's. The circuit court held that Decade's lien was subordinate because its judgment had not been perfected. That's actually not true. So I think that we started to go on this tangent of perfected under the statute, not perfected the way the court's using it in Badger. And I think that led them somewhat astray momentarily. I think they got back on track. Go to paragraph 12. For a judgment to be capable of creating a lien, it must be rendered, perfected, and entered. I believe that's an incorrect statement.
Mm-hmm. I have that.
Since I think we've already gone through ad nauseum. They go on, entering the judgment involves two steps. The party must file the judgment in the clerk's office, at which time the clerk must enter or docket the judgment in the judgment lien docket. I believe they're absolutely accurate there.
They are accurate.
They use the word file, but I haven't seen filed. I've seen entered. Mm-hmm. Entered meaning that it's actually given to the clerk for entry on the docket system and the judgment lien docket. That's two different acts by the clerk.
Mm-hmm. And paragraph 13 is the sentence that I think has the or.
Right. 13, again, I think we are led astray on 80604 saying no execution shall issue until the judgment is perfected or until the expiration of time for perfection. That's obviously not the only time that an undocketed judgment can be executed upon entry in the judgment lien document docket, as we've indicated at 815.05.
Okay.
At 14, however, they borrow from Builders Lumber and say, moreover, a judgment must be properly docketed to become a lien. They're back on track. And it seems that although we may have gone astray once or twice, and much like I believe Justice Bradley has indicated, we can easily go astray with the execution statute, I believe We need to bring ourselves back to center by focusing on, first, the facts at hand. The facts at hand are, did Decade perfect the lien merely by serving the order to appear, which only gives notice to the debtor and nobody else in the world? In fact, the order to appear itself, and the court could take judicial notice of this, was not filed in their own case until last month, August of 2013.
Is the manner in which a lien perfected dependent upon the type of the lien asserted, that is, like a judgment lien or a statutory lien or an equitable lien, and the type of property against which the lien is asserted, personal versus real?
See, no authority for that.
You know, the more I think about this, at least very quickly, and of course the case you cite, Builders Lumber as well as South Milwaukee, are both real estate cases on this notice. But the more I think about it, maybe both of you are defective. You're defective because you didn't serve first. You didn't serve until late. And the other party's defective because they didn't dock it, right? So maybe no one has a lien. So then what's the situation if nobody has a lien?
We cured the problem of not giving notice to the judgment debtor. We did serve him. We don't have a defect, with all due respect.
Okay. So, but then you'd say the lien didn't come into effect until you served.
Borrowing from Badger, we perfected upon service, but notice to the world was given when we docketed it.
Okay.
And if we're going to set the pointer, if the court is being asked now to set the pointer
right in
time, we can't wait for perfection if we properly docket it. But more importantly to this case, Decades served the order to appear before docketing. They have the defect. That's the defect, because it's never been cured prior to us getting our order to appear served and the motion for turnover granted.
So your answer is, yep, they were both defective in different ways, but you cured first, so you get the lien.
I believe that's correct.
That's if we say you got to serve and docket and serve and docket under theirs.
I must admit that I have difficulty with saying that what happened with us was defective. We tried to serve him and ultimately did.
I know that goes to your second argument,
the equities.
Of equities here and the relationship among the parties. There's another case that was cited here. It was Boston Old Colony. And in Boston Old Colony, which is not a judgment lien and not a real estate, not personal property, it was filing a notice of appeal. And the party served the notice of appeal, filed the notice of appeal in the clerk's office. But the clerk didn't stamp it right. And so you had an issue of the stamp, and it's a jurisdictional issue. And the court said that the notice of appeal can be considered filed on when it was actually received by the clerk, even though it was stamped, which is filed, at a later date. So that may have some bearing here, because they sent failure to dock it was the clerk's fault.
May I distinguish, Your Honor?
Yeah, sure.
Or attempt to, anyway? With respect to the notice of appeal, the only person that really needs to have it is the clerk.
Yeah, and the important thing about this case is whether it's notice to the clerk or notice to the public. And it's notice to the clerk and public if it's put into the docket.
And the legislature said if it wasn't done right by the clerk, there's a remedy. Thank you for the extra time.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you for your time.
Ms. Bailey Wren.
Thank you. Briefly, this issue, I did hear Mr. Levine say you don't need a docketed judgment to have a supplemental examination. That's what we're talking about here, because under the Badger Line case, it says the first to serve the order to appear is what's important. It's not, and there's nothing in the supplemental examination statutes, we all agree, that requires a docketed judgment. So they're imposing this new requirement that deals, now obviously, the only place it comes into effect, in the cases I could find, all deal with real estate. There's nothing that says you need a docketed judgment to get a lien on personal property. Now, we're talking a receiver's lien, because that's a common law lien that is outside the statutes. And so the docketing concept that we got a little confused about on execution, that again is a statutory procedure. That's not a common law lien. That's where you go out and you seize stuff. But as a side, I think you can read 81504 and 81505 together, because 81505 also talks about execution upon a judgment to enforce a lien upon specific property. Again, that's the type of judgment I was talking about where you can't get docketed, but you still can get execution on that type of judgment. So I think it's saying if you do have a docketed lien, you have to put it in, but that doesn't mean if you don't have a docketed lien, you can't have an execution. But again, those are statutory liens. Those are not personal property, common law liens. And if this issue is you've got to have both docketing and serve, then you have to have the issue, when does it relate back to? I mean, we attempted to docket. But if you take our later filed docket and you relate it back, we win because we were the first to serve. And the idea is you can't be asleep on your rights. You can't wait 8 months to try to serve by publication and then say, okay, well, we're first because you're a friend. Well, the reason we didn't appeal the turnover order is the turnover order says the receiver gets the assets, the receiver gets to sell it, the receiver gets this pot of money, and it's waiting to find out who gets the pot of money. We all agree that if there's a pot of money, we want it. It's not as if we're sleeping on our rights. As to this idea about the lien, when you docket a lien, it is a lien for 10 years. There's nothing that requires you to rush out, and as a judgment creditor, trying to enforce a judgment lien, very specific procedures, it takes a long time. So normally what you do is you docket the lien and you wait till the property is sold, and then if there's any surplus, then you get paid, or in some cases you buy out the first. So, you know, there's no inertia in waiting. In fact, most creditors, that's what they do. So, you know, I think the Badger Lines case is correct. I think it makes sense because we aren't a race notice for personal property because it's just too difficult. Because personal property, by its nature, is intangible, and a lot of times it disappears. So the only way you're going to have notice is by doing the order to show and then the supplemental examination. But if the court does decide that it needs to clean up or change Badger Lines, again, I agree with the counsel for the last case. It should be prospective only. We've been operating under this for 14 years. Every creditor's lawyer knows if you want a lien on personal property, you're going to have to get that order served first. And that's how you do it. Because in a limited pool of assets, the first person to get the lien is likely to get the payment. Otherwise, you're not going to get paid. So I think the sunburst arguments do make sense in this situation because it is a very clear rule that we have operated under a long time. And the reality is if SB1 wanted to get a lien first, they could have served by publication Mr. Collier before they even bothered to come looking at his business associates to try to drive them into this. And so this idea that the equities are in their favor, I don't think really apply because they did have procedures to do. They could serve by publication. So I believe it or not, that's all I have to say. And unless there's any other questions, I'll shut up.
When I read this and realized once again that the statutes are silent, and they replace the creditor's bill. I wondered whether we should just get rid of these liens as common law liens. You know, this area of the law should probably have much more legislation and detail, it seemed to me, that says do this or don't do that. This is what the result is. And what you have is got a lot of words in these statutes, but you don't, I don't get a clear-cut picture of what steps I should take to, I want to keep away from the words perfect, et cetera, although they may be good, how to make sure that I get a lien and it's first, or beats out others. And coming in on these cases with so many different fact situations possible in the commercial market, I wonder about the wisdom of judgment. I'm sorry, I should say creditor or receiver liens. What do you have to say about that?
I think they are still important, and I'll tell you why. Because typically when you try to execute on personal property, the sheriff comes out and comes back and says, he doesn't have anything, they're all exempt. The only way you really know what a person has is when you bring them into a supplemental examination, make them turn over their financial documents and actually look at it, and then you get then the receiver's appointed has turnover order and does it that way. If you get rid of the liens, then you're going to have a lot of judgment debtors who are going to basically be avoiding responsibilities based on non-exempt assets. I mean, obviously, Wisconsin has exemptions. Most debtors have exemptions for personal property. So this only applies in the commercial context when you really do need some mechanism to give a creditor a lien on non-exempt property. And the only way you do it is, frankly, through the creditor's or receiver's lien.
Yeah, but, you know, if we did not have a lien on personal property, you could still do the supplemental exams, and if you found some property, execute against the property. So I don't see how that really changes the way you do business. But we wouldn't have to worry about whether your service or someone that no one knew about except the debtor was somehow impinging upon the rights of a creditor who had a judgment ahead of the judgment that you're having a supplemental on.
Because if you don't have a lien on the time you're served, the assets walk out the back door. I mean, literally, that's the problem is if you say you can do a supplemental examination, but if you have no lien to that point, there's nothing to prevent the debtor from, you know, selling them, getting rid of the assets. So that's why I think, you know, having the lien attached the minute the time the person got served, that's why when you do a garnishment, you know, I always serve the bank first because that puts the lien on the money there. If I serve the debtor first, he's going to go down to the bank and take the money out. So I think that's the reason.
Okay. But, you know, just a garnishment is another problem with the common law lien. I mean, if you filed served your order on the debtor and 5 days later I tried to garnish the debtor's bank account, what happens to that part of the statute that says that there is a lien on that property that the garnishee defendant is required to enforce until the action is taken care of?
I think that what happens is that they just freeze the account. But I think this is a good point because then you're looking at a common law lien and a statutory lien and the UCC and butting heads. And I think you have to look at the priority. But I think in that case it's a much harder issue than when you've got two common law lien creditors like you have in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Are there any other questions? Thank you, counsel. And we want to, on behalf of the court, thank Attorney Bailey Wynn and Attorney Neil Levin. We're happy to have you in our state, even for a short time. And for, again, a good argument on an issue to interpret common law liens, as we did this morning. That concludes our argument in 11AP 2597, Associated Bank versus Collier. And the court we have one more day of oral argument, so the court is in recess. until next week on our last day of scheduled oral argument. And the court will meet in the conference room at 3:25. We are in recess.